illegally detain and deport anyone suspected of engaging in acts like espionage and sabotage.
Not only must the shame of Japanese treachery be wiped out, but the forces of international brutality, wherever they exist, must be absolutely and finally broken.
Weeks later, Roosevelt directed the Secretary of War to herd more than 120,000 people with Japanese ancestry into camps in Arizona, California, Wyoming, Colorado, Utah, Idaho, and as far east as Arkansas. Two-thirds of prisoners were American-born citizens. First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt had empathized with them, even touring a camp south of Phoenix in 1943. Barbara Perry says Eleanor was simply ahead of her time.
And certainly on how she viewed Japanese Americans, but she couldn't convince her husband of that.
Perry is co-chair of the Presidential Oral History Program at the University of Virginia. She also points out precedent was set a century prior, when President Andrew Jackson signed the Indian Removal Act in 1830, marching tribes west of the Mississippi River.
America was pretty discriminatory.
Despite not being at war, President Trump reinvoked the Alien Enemies Act on day one of his second term.
To eliminate the presence of all foreign gangs and criminal networks, bringing devastating crime to U.S. soil, including our cities and inner cities.
This proclamation wasn't surprising to John Woolley, co-director of the American Presidency Project at UC Santa Barbara.
This is a domestic political rallying point that is very powerful with Donald Trump's base.
I'm Gabriel Pietrazio.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, December 18th, 2025.
This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes
Althea Billings and Josh Salem.
The producer is Annette Newell and our engineer is Otto.
Our director of evening news is Althea Billings.
Special thanks to Public News Service and Native Voice One. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Annette Newell. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News In Depth, up next.
Welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest with Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. It's critical commentary on foreign affairs from a human interest perspective. The opinions expressed in the following segment are those of the speaker.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest. I'm Mel Gertov. I'll be reporting and commenting on the most important and sometimes the most neglected international news of the week. Here are today's top stories. Protecting Ukraine takes a step forward. China's overseas lending, a surprise recipient, and U.S. intervention in Venezuela deepens. First, protecting Ukraine takes a step forward. The latest U.S. National Security Strategy report, which places the U.S. between Europe and Russia as though in a balancing act, suggested that Ukraine's security was of little concern to the U.S. Trump has not been supplying Ukraine with weapons or other funds, nor has he imposed sanctions on Russia for resisting his so-called peace plan. But a breakthrough has just occurred. Trump's negotiators have indicated the U.S. will provide platinum security guarantees to Ukraine, along with Europe. This was proposed as a last-ditch, take-it-or-leave-it proposition. What Ukraine must leave is territory, in a manner still undecided. Nevertheless, President Zelensky said the security guarantees are, quote, equivalent to Article 5 in the NATO Collective Security Treaty. He seems satisfied that he has a commitment to protect Ukraine in case of a Russian attack. The guarantees are said to be legally binding and subject to U.S. Senate approval as a treaty. The U.S. still has around 73,000 troops in Europe, but under Trump, can they be counted on to help resist Russian pressure tactics? Still, the Europeans are elated with this change in the U.S. position. Ukraine will be able to defend itself in the long term, not only on its own, but also with the support of states allied with Ukraine. And that is good news, said German Chancellor Friedrich Merz. Will Vladimir Putin accept such a deal? Since it does not involve a European or U.S. military presence in Ukraine, he has reason to be pleased. On the other hand, he has always firmly rejected any arrangement that allows for a NATO-like protection of Ukraine. And the vital issue to Russia of territorial concessions seems to be still up in the air. Providing financial help to Ukraine is also critical. The European Union has announced that it will indefinitely freeze about $247 billion worth of Russian central bank assets held in Europe. This means that the funds cannot be blocked by a later vote by governments sympathetic to Moscow, namely Hungary and Slovakia. Most of that money will be made available to Ukraine as a loan for post-war reconstruction, provided Belgium, where the money is being held, agrees. Ukraine would not be required to repay the loan unless Russia pays for the damage it has caused. Many in Europe are thinking beyond the Ukraine war to the threat posed by Russia to Europe. British leaders have been outspoken on that threat. The shadow of war is knocking at Europe's door, says Britain's defense minister. The new head of M16, the British intelligence service, says, "We are living in a space between peace and war that is dominated by the acute threat posed by Russia." She said, "The export of chaos is a feature, not a bug, in the Russian approach to international engagement." Britain has created a special intelligence agency to monitor Russia, and the defense community there is calling for more military spending in recognition of the reduced reliability of the United States. China's overseas lending a surprise recipient. China has made over $2 trillion in loans and grants around the world in support of its Belt and Road Initiative, far higher than previously thought. The greater part of those funds, we now know, is not going to developing countries. The biggest recipient of its financing over the past two decades is the United States, where Chinese banks have extended $200 billion in financial support to American companies and projects, according to Aid Data, a research institute at the College of William and Mary in Williamsburg, Virginia. The money goes into the construction of pipelines, data centers, and airport terminals. Loans and corporate financing for companies such as Tesla, Amazon, Disney, and Boeing. The financing is apart from the $730 billion in U.S. Treasury securities that China holds. U.S. intervention in Venezuela deepens. The Trump administration stepped up pressure on the Nicolas Maduro government in two ways. First, by helping the former presidential candidate and current Nobel Peace Prize winner, Marina Corina Machado, to escape to Oslo, and second, by engaging in a piratical seizure of a Venezuelan oil tanker and then announcing a total and complete blockade of all sanctioned oil tankers entering or leaving Venezuela. Machado, the Venezuelan opposition leader, said she was able to leave the country with the help of the U.S. after spending more than a year in hiding. "We had support from the U.S. government," she told reporters in Oslo. She, in turn, lent support to Trump's policies, saying, quote, "I believe that President Trump's actions have been decisive to reach the point we are at right now, in which the regime is weaker than ever. You need to raise the cost of staying in power and lower the cost of leaving power." Seizure of the oil tanker apparently took place in Venezuelan waters. President Trump said the U.S. would probably keep the oil, some of which was destined for Cuba and most for China. There was no pretense of legality in the action, which Venezuela, in a letter to the UN Security Council, called an act of state piracy. nor are the U.S. goals of gaining control of Venezuela's oil and regime change being hidden. U.S. policy no longer is all about stopping drug trafficking. Trump as much as admitted that when he declared Venezuela a foreign terrorist organization and said the blockade would continue, quote, until such time as they return to the USA all of the oil, land, and other assets that they previously stole from us. As usual, Trump gave no evidence to support such a wild claim. In other news, Russian atrocities in Africa. An investigation by CNN and The Century has exposed war crimes committed by the Russian mercenary force, the Wagner Group, in the Central African Republic, the CAR. The Wagner Group was supposedly in the CAR to train its army, which is fighting a rebellion, but Wagner's role has been in military operations as well. Wagner's presence in the CAR has grown accordingly, from a few hundred in 2017 to over 2,300 today. According to CNN, Russian mercenaries have engaged in atrocities, including mass shootings, torture, and rape of civilians. A United Nations group that monitors private military contractors like Wagner has protested to the Russian and CAR governments, but without results. Canada sets out the welcome mat for U.S. researchers. The Canadian government has announced a $1 billion program to lure researchers to work in Canada, in particular U.S. scientists and Canadians working in the U.S. The program cites the superior work environment of Canada, free of political pressure and funding cuts. It would provide H-1B visas to professional people who receive the grants, directly opposite of anti-immigration forces in the U.S. who want to end H-1B visas. The welcome mat is not out for tourists headed to the U.S. The Guardian reports that the Trump administration has a plan to require, quote, all tourists to the United States to reveal their social media activity from the last 5 years. Customs and Border Protection, which is under the Department of Homeland Security, would also require any email addresses and telephone numbers visitors have used in the same period, and the names, addresses, birth dates, and birthplaces of family members, including children. The plan would apply even to tourists from countries such as Britain and Japan that don't need a visa to enter the U.S. If implemented, the plan would further decimate the tourist industry, which has already been hit by higher fees for foreign tourists to visit U.S. national parks and by a requirement of foreign students that they must unlock their social media profiles for inspection by U.S. consulates in order to obtain a visa. Next, U.S. military spending is rising sharply. Stephen Semler, who tracks Pentagon spending, reports that the 2026 U.S. military budget up for approval is $1.02 trillion, or 40% of global military spending, and equal to the official military budgets of the next 12 highest countries, from China down to Israel. He notes that 115 House Democrats have voted for this budget. Donald Trump desperately seeks recognition as a peacemaker. Trump has finally won a peace prize, but in a way that is terribly embarrassing and farcical for everyone except him and the man who awarded it. The self-promoting head of FIFA, the International Soccer Federation, created the peace prize just weeks ago, just for Trump, who was the only candidate. Count on the two of them to show off the award during the World Cup competition. The prize is supposed to honor Trump's peacekeeping efforts, but two of them have recently unraveled. The first is along the border between Thailand and Cambodia, in a war that Trump was supposed to have stopped in October. Both countries are claiming casualties, and both are also discounting the agreement they signed with Trump to stop the fighting. Thailand's Prime Minister Anutin Bumjatai says he, quote, doesn't remember that agreement anymore. Trump called Anutin, but the prime minister is riding a wave of nationalism over the border fighting and evidently wants to use it to secure his minority party's power. The second unresolved conflict is between the Democratic Republic of Congo and the Rwanda-backed M23 militia. Less than 2 weeks ago, their representatives had signed a peace agreement in a ceremony in Washington that was attended by several African leaders. Now the fighting has resumed and thousands of people are fleeing. None of this has stopped Trump from self-promoting. In the midst of a legal struggle over DOJ's seizure of the U.S. Institute of Peace, which a federal judge ruled was illegal, Donald Trump has put his name over the door. It's now the Donald Trump Institute of Peace. The Institute is a nonpartisan research organization established by Congress. The State Department justified the change by saying that Trump is, quote, the greatest deal maker in our nation's history. I suppose committing war crimes in the Caribbean, appeasing Russia, and ignoring ethnic cleansing, if not genocide in Gaza, qualify as deal making for peace. A Chinese medical firm has one senator terrified. CNBC reports on the Chinese company BGI, one of the largest genomics companies in the world. It operates DNA sequencing laboratories in China and abroad. It processes genetic data for hospitals, pharmaceutical firms, and researchers across dozens of countries. CNBC says that BGI, quote, helped build national genetic databases and pandemic testing systems in the U.S., Europe, and Japan. And BGI has had close ties to China's genome projects, which include collecting DNA from minority nationalities for surveillance. The possibility that BGI could collect DNA from tens of millions of people around the world leaves Democratic Senator Mark Warner terrified. When linked with artificial intelligence, the genomic data can be used for surveillance, tracking, and long-term biological research tied to China's military, according to the Washington Post reporting. They are hoovering up DNA data, Warner said. This level of experimentation on humans and intellectual property theft, we all should be concerned about. Next, U.S. soldiers killed in Syria present a challenge for the new government. Two U.S. soldiers and their interpreter were killed while on patrol in central Syria. Coming soon after the new Syrian leader, Ahmed al-Sharaa, visited Washington and was highly praised by Trump, the killing presents a major problem for the new government that overthrew the Bashar al-Assad dictatorship. Instability is the chief one. The country must contend with the Islamic State, ISIS, which probably was responsible for the attack, with the Kurdish militia that essentially runs the northeast of the country and has yet to integrate with Syria's army, and with various religious and other groups that have been at war with the government. The U.S. has around 1,000 troops in Syria. The attacks on the soldiers might lead Trump to withdraw them, but for now, he is threatening retaliation. Finally, two updates on human rights cases. In the Abrego Garcia detention case, the federal judge who ordered him returned from imprisonment in El Salvador ordered him released on December 10th. She cited the government's lying about Costa Rica's refusal to accept him for deportation. Respondents, meaning the U.S. government, did not just stonewall, they affirmatively misled the tribunal, she wrote. They, meaning the government's lawyers, announced that Liberia is the only viable removal option because Costa Rica does not wish to receive him. But Costa Rica had never wavered in its commitment to receive Abrego Garcia, just as Abrego Garcia never wavered in his commitment to resettle there. For now, Abrego Garcia is a free man. Not free is Jimmy Lai, the Hong Kong newspaper publisher and regime critic. He has been found guilty by a Chinese court, charged with collusion with foreign forces and sedition, a common charge used to silence dissidents. Lai has been a thorn in China's side for decades, in particular as the owner of the independent Apple Daily, which is now shuttered. At 78 and in poor health, Lai may not survive the heavy sentence he will doubtless receive. Trump has boasted that he can gain Lai's release any time. Let's see if he will exploit his new friendship with Xi Jinping. And that's the Global Citizen International Digest for the week. I'm Mel Gertov. Thanks for listening and take good care. Thank you.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
In a world of fast fashion and rising costs, one Portland organization is trying something truly radical. I drive down Northeast Prescott Street almost every day. It's a route I know by heart. Yet, for nearly a year, I managed to drive right past the storefront that I never truly saw. When I finally stopped, walking into the shop was like entering a fantasy land. Everywhere I looked, there were amazing, affordable clothes and warm, open people. It felt less like a retail store and more like a community living room. That space is called Radical Abundance. After a sudden move from their home in the Coley neighborhood, Radical Abundance is officially cutting the ribbon on a brand new, larger space in the Hollywood District this Friday. But this isn't just a thrift store. It's a community-funded force for gender-affirming care and racial justice. I sat down with the shop manager, Sophia Georgiadis, to talk about the magic of used clothes, the pay-what-you-can model, and why healing the body is a political act. I started out by asking her to introduce herself and the heart behind the organization.
I'm Sophia Georgiadis. I'm the shop manager at Radical Abundance, and I am kind of the daily presence and consistency that they've hired on this summer. Radical Abundance has been around for about 2 years. It started by massage therapists who were just trying to serve what we see as the most marginalized communities, being trans women and BIPOC community members. So we wanted to do what we can for them and make a space where marginalized communities and people with needs that are often ignored by capitalism and excluded, where they can be brought in and safe and together.
Let's start with the radical part of the name. To most people, a thrift store is just a place to buy used goods. What's your understanding of the specific gap in Portland that Radical Abundance was created to fill?
A lot of the times people are shocked that this works, because how could you possibly give things away for free and have a shop still? It really touches on like our baseline humanity. We do all have enough. It's just not in the people's hands who need it. So this shop is like an in-between, a distribution center almost. I call us all queerdos, and I consider that everyone who donates to the shop becomes a fairy queer parent. And they're given by a fairy queer parent somewhere else in Portland. And so wonderful to imagine we're just all contributing to each other's lives in these magical little ways and making sure that everyone's able to have access to safe expression and to abundance.
I read that the project is almost entirely volunteer-run, with you being the only paid employee. This strikes me as a beautiful testament to the volunteer community. When you look around the shop on a busy afternoon, what does this tell you about the people of Portland, that they show up to do this work for free?
Every time someone has an idea, it contributes to the space, and it glows and grows, and it can't exist without all of us. And it's really nice to know that so many people care that it creates something like this.
Can you describe the pay what you can model?
Our suggested donation prices that are hung around the shop are absolutely suggested and are absolutely donations. These clothes are just available to you. Buying clothes should not put you into financial distress. You deserve to have things that make you feel bright and lovely and comfortable and like a glowing warmth.
The pay-what-you-can model is a generous and rare thing to see in a retail space. When you watch someone realize they can actually afford something they need because of that structure, how does this change the way people interact with objects in the store, or even the way they talk to you at the register?
There is no pressure for this item to take away from your life. It can only add. I have had many beautiful touching hugs, touching conversations, and moments with people that have brought me and them to tears, with the fact that we're truly just wanting to provide for them and give to them and serve them.
Can you tell us about the specific services your grants cover and why these treatments are important to your community members?
So we focus on two services right now, electrolysis for trans women of the facial area and body work grants for BIPOC community members. There is a lot of physical proof that the pain and oppression caused affects our bodies, and it matters that people get care for that. So it's important for us to acknowledge the physical impact that oppression has and that these systems of oppression have on our neighbors and inside of ourselves as well. Often the people experiencing the most oppressive forces have the most limited access to these resources that can help release this and process this in their bodies.
For anyone just tuning in, I'm talking with Sophia Georgiadis from the Radical Abundance Thrift Shop here in Portland. This Friday is your grand reopening in Hollywood. If we were to walk through the front doors with you right now, what's the one detail that makes you stop and think, we made it?
I would have to say our central wall countertop covered it in handprints from volunteers, and their hands are on the walls now, on the counter bar. It feels like it encapsulates our fun vibe and how androgynous and welcoming we want the space to be.
Now that the racks are full, what can folks expect to find when they come through the doors this weekend?
Well, I'm excited that we got over 1,200 pounds of clothes donated in just 3 weeks. I love goth prep and some steampunk magic that you'll find, and pastel princesses and some 80s rock gods, all these sorts of vibes that are just too fun to explore in the shop and to have them all together for people to find.
Besides donating clothes, what's the one behind the scenes need that would ensure Radical Abundance stays stable and rooted for years to come?
I think that one of the most important things that we need is for people to know about us. Financial donations are really huge for us. The more resources we have, the more we have to give.
What is the feeling you hope a customer carries home with them?
I'd hope that they'd feel surprised at how different it feels, because it really does have a tangible difference. We just want the people that are there. We just want them.
That was Sophia Georgiadis, shop manager at Radical Abundance. It's rare to find a space that treats fashion not just as commerce, but as a form of community care. Whether you're looking to find your inner 80s rock god, or you just need a warm coat without the financial stress, their doors are open to everyone. The grand reopening celebration starts this Friday, December 19th, at their new home in the Hollywood District at 1805 Northeast Cesar E. Chavez Boulevard. They'll be open from 4 to 7 on Friday and 2 to 6 on Saturday and Sunday. If you can't make it down this weekend, you can still support their care grants by donating online at radicalabundance.org or following them on Instagram at radicalabundance. We'll be right back.
Estás escuchando KBOO 90.7 FM en Portland y también en el internet en kboo.fm.
You are listening to KBOO Community Radio. Today, December 18th, Oregon's Farm Worker Union, PCUN, and the Oregon for All